Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 2nd, 2008. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, 5 ways to make your pictures look better than everyone else's. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I'm sorry that I missed last week. It was a very, very busy week at Macworld. Very long days and long nights, but it was fun. And I got to meet a lot of people. I met a lot of Digital Story members. Some of you are listening right now. Now, one of the things that I taught last week, I had an aperture workshop and I had classes on iPhoto on the expo floor, but I also taught this class 5 ways to make your pictures look better than everyone else's. And it turned out very well. It was in a very large room, like a ballroom-like room, and I think we had over 300 people, and I've got very good feedback on that. So I thought what I would do today is share those same 5 tips, those same 5 ways, in case you couldn't make it to the class that we had in San Francisco. Now you can get it right now on your iPod or on your car or however you happen to be listening to the show. And those of you that did show up for the class, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And many of you introduced yourself. This will be a little bit of a recap. So I'm sure you didn't take notes during class because, you know, who wants to do that at a conference? So now you'll have them right here. Now, I also want to mention that I will post, I created title slides for each of the 5 ways. And it's a trick that I use in iPhoto. I've written about it on the Digital Story where you create a postcard, but instead of actually printing it, you save it to PDF and it puts in an iPhoto as a JPEG, and it makes a really nice little graphic. So I have 5 of those that represent the 5 different techniques I'll be talking about today, and those will be in the show notes. So if you want to see examples of each of the techniques, make sure you go to the show notes on the Digital Story, and I'll run those 5 slides so you can check it out. I also want to mention that people shared all sorts of great things with me last week, thoughts and their opinion and techniques and tips. And many of them also shared their cold with me one way or another. So if you hear a little something in my voice, well, that's what it is. We call it the Macworld bug. And I had gone really, really well all winter without getting a cold, but now Macworld sort of did me in. But I have plenty of voice to do this show, and so we're just going to roll right on through it. I'm going to start with the first tip, and as I said in class, this is one that we've all heard before, but I want to talk just a little bit more about it. It's called get close, right? Get close, and then of course once you get close, as the saying goes, get closer. Now the reason why I bring up this obvious tip is because I still think that we forget to get close into our subjects. And again, what we're looking for here are ways to distinguish our photographs from those of others. And one of the ways that we can do that is by framing our portraits closer. So that doesn't mean you have to shoot them all that way. But of course, you know, shoot some the standard way and then shoot another series where you get in really tight. Get in really tight and see what you can do. Also, things like flowers and just any texture, anything going on in nature or in the world around us seems to come to life more as we get closer. Again, almost all of our cameras have some sort of close-up mode on them. And right now, just ask yourself, how often do you go to that mode? How often do you think, I am going to get close today? I'm going to spend the whole day shooting nothing but close-up stuff. What happens is, as you start to shoot in close-up mode and really get in tight on the world around us, anything that's mundane can suddenly become interesting. And I think people respond to these shots because we're showing them the world that they don't normally see. The world that they normally see is sort of at an arm's length as they whisk through it, let alone where you stop for a second and get in really close on a flower, get in really close on a patch of concrete, bricks. I mean, anything can suddenly become, especially if the lighting is interesting, can become more dynamic if you get closer. Now, I have to mention something about this that is kind of humorous to me. So last night when I went to bed, obviously I must have been thinking about this podcast, and I had seen the movie 300, which is what was about Sparta, and quite an interesting, dramatic, and you know, blood-filled movie, but well done and very stylized. And I had seen news reports, you know, about the continuing investigation about the tiger that was taunted here in San Francisco Zoo and actually got out, killed a boy, and mauled a couple others. So all this must have been swimming around in my head when I was thinking about the talk that I was going to do today. And I had this dream last night where this man came up to me, very agitated, very upset, saying that I was responsible for his daughter's death. This is a dream. Now, I'm going to say this is a dream. And I went, oh my gosh, I mean, that's horrible. That's horrible. What happened? And I, at the same time, trying to calm him down because, you know, I think he had thoughts of revenge. So I was trying to calm him down and find out what happened at the same time. And he said, well, she had attended one of my classes and had taken this get close thing to heart and had actually got closer yet to a tiger while she was photographing it. And the tiger killed her, mauled her, and killed her. And he was holding me responsible for her death. Again, this is in a dream. So in the dream, I talked it out with him. And then you know how dreams are. Then they sort of, you know, go out to somewhere else. So I woke up this morning and I was thinking about this dream. I remembered it. And I thought, you know, I maybe better adjust my talk today. Because not only, you know, should you get close, but this is for objects that can't hurt you, right? Like a flower. Flowers, you can get as close as you want. For objects, you know, or living creatures or something where you're going to be in danger, then I think we need to modify it to frame close, not get close. And what I mean by that is maybe put a telephoto lens on your camera and frame close instead of get closing, especially for things like tigers and any animal or human or ledge or anything that can hurt you. Be safe. So when it's safe, get close, and when it's not safe, frame close. So I'm glad I had that dream last night because it allows me to really articulate this first tip clearly. Now, one other thing I want to say about it, and what I mentioned to people, is that this is one of the reasons why I insist that you shoot at your camera's highest resolution. And this is mainly for people who aren't shooting RAW. If you're shooting RAW, obviously you're getting all the information, but if you're not shooting RAW, if you're shooting JPEG, make sure that you shoot at your camera's highest resolution. And with a compact camera, what happens is this can actually extend your telephoto. If you have an 8 megapixel compact and your optical lens can't quite reach the subject, take the picture anyway because you know that when you get back on your computer, you can crop out half of the frame and you still have enough pixel information to make a nice size print. So shooting at your highest resolution is part of getting close, or in the case of tigers, framing close. My second tip is shoot at night or shoot at twilight. Again, what we're looking for are ways to distinguish your pictures from everyone else's. And what happens a lot of times, whenever we're traveling or out and about, we get in sort of this rut where we take our pictures about the same time of day, and often it is the time of day. Now, those are great. Don't get me wrong. We're talking about ways to add pictures to your collection to make them look different than everyone else's. For instance, what I used in class, I had this scene that I took in downtown Tampa, Florida. And I took it during the day. It was a beautiful day, big clouds and all sorts of stuff. And I said, if I told 10 photographers, you know, especially amateur photographers, to take a picture of downtown Tampa right here, and I point him in that direction, I would say that probably at least 9 of the photographs would come back looking something like this. During the day, some beautiful sky, da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, hopefully one photographer, one of those 10, would come back with a shot at twilight. And then I switched to the next slide that had a shot of downtown at twilight. Exact same scene, exact same buildings, exact same everything, yet it looked completely different. And especially if you shoot when there's a little bit of color in the sky, there's that window of opportunity when there's color in the sky and the lights start to come on in the buildings. That's the time that you want to take pictures. So again, you know, if you want to make your stuff look different than everyone else's, one of the ways that you can do it is shoot at the very edges of the day. Not during the sweet light, but at the edges where it's actually moving from dark to light, or from light to dark. And your shots will look different, and they look great in the mix. The next tip that I talked about, and I spent a little bit of time on this, is that you have to learn how to control your flash. The problem with auto flash is that most of the time it works exactly opposite of how I want to shoot. In other words, when I'm indoors and the light is a little bit low, it'll fire in order to illuminate whatever subject's within 8 feet of the flash. But, you know, I usually want more expanse on my indoor shots. I want to see the whole room. I want to see all the different, you know, kinds of lighting throughout the room, in addition to my subject that may be in the foreground. So I like to turn the flash off indoors, raise that ISO up. If I'm shooting with a DSLR, I'll put a faster lens on my 50 f1.8, and off I go. Now, when I'm outdoors a lot of times, and especially if I have to work in contrasty light or something, and if I have a compact, I'll turn on the flash. Of course, in auto flash mode, it would never turn on because there's plenty of light, so thinks the camera. But the problem is the light is usually not a flattering light, especially midday. By turning on the flash, I can add a little fill light coming from the front. And as we know, light from the front helps soften wrinkles, helps put a little twinkle in the eyes, and is a very flattering light, especially when it's not the only light. You know, when you're shooting outdoors, you have the ambient light, you have the background lit up, you have light coming, you know, bouncing around from all directions, and then a little bit of light coming from the front could be quite flattering. So that's sometimes, not always, but sometimes when you want to turn on your flash. Now, another time that I think you need to take control of your flash is when you're shooting portraits at twilight or, you know, at dawn or dusk or anywhere around there, and you want to capture those beautiful ambient colors in the sky or that, you know, that background monument or whatever you happen to have that's lit up, and that's when you want to go to nighttime flash or slow synchro flash. And what that will do is it'll slow down the shutter to capture the ambient light, yet give a little bit of flash to light up your subject. Now, a lot of times for slow synchro flash, you might want to mount your camera on a tripod or set it on a ledge or something and use the self-timer because that, you know, you do have a slow shutter speed for the background and you will get some movement. However, if you hand-hold it and you hold it very still, sometimes that effect is interesting, that little bit of motion in the background with the flash sort of freezing the detail on the subject. Now, a couple people in class asked me, well, no matter what they do, their flash always seems a little too hot, a little too bright on foreground subjects. I think most of us experience that. It doesn't look natural. The illumination doesn't look natural. And in that case, find your flash compensation dial and scale it back. Scale it back, you know, to -1. What that does is it tells the camera that no matter how much flash you think you need, just do f-stop less. And sometimes that will do the trick. I also like flash exposure lock, and almost all the Canons I have that, the upper-end Canons. It's a little button that usually looks like a star, an asterisk or something. And if I'm doing flash photography, I can press that button. It will do a little flash to take a reading. It does all its calculations and measurements. Then when I take the real flash shot, a lot of times it will turn out better. So either using the flash compensation or the flash exposure lock will help you, you know, take a little bit of control of your flash, especially when you're using it in lower light where it tends to overexpose subjects. You may hear that it's in a little bit in the background. You may hear that it's raining. So up here in Northern California, we have one of those weeks where the air is cold. We got cold air coming down from the north, and we have rain coming in off the Pacific, and so we have this sort of cold, wet, dreary condition. It's not bad at all compared to what people are going through in different parts. But it is good weather to stay inside, especially if you have a cold. It's particularly good weather to do podcasting, I think. So this is the perfect podcasting day. It's, I have a cold. It's a little dreary outside, and I have lots to talk about. So if you hear the pitter-patter of rain, you know what's going on. It's winter. It's winter here in Northern California. So the next thing that I want to talk about is switching to burst mode. And this is a really good tip. Now, I did a whole podcast on this, but it never hurts to just remind folks that when you're shooting portraits, especially existing light portraits, burst mode can be a godsend. Because what happens is, we spend a lot of time lining up that first shot, and usually the model has, stiffened up a little bit, shall we say. We don't get the most natural expression. The smile might be a little stale, all that kind of stuff. And that, if we only work in single shots, a lot of times those are the expressions that we'll get. Now, instead, what if you, do all that work to get everything set up, but then you shoot 10 frames instead of just one? And you go pop, 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 like that. And the whole time that you're shooting, you're talking to the model. He or she is interacting with you. And you have this more dynamic situation. And this is where burst mode can really give you some nice looking shots, some very natural looking portraits. I think it's, one of my best tips for people shots, other than using fill flash sometimes outdoors or reflectors for when you really want to control the lighting. But burst mode is a terrific way to go. And even compact cameras have, continuous mode or burst mode. It can be called either. It may not be really fast, but it still works and it still gets the job done. And even if it's only one frame a second, you get that nice string of shots. And you can, right in there in the middle sometimes, you'll have something that's very interesting. And if you don't like the other shots, you can just let them go. But at the end of 100 or 150 frames, I'll bet you have 7 or 8 shots that you really like. So burst mode is a really good way to get natural looking portraits. Now, even though I'm giving you 5 tips today, these aren't my only 5 tips for making your pictures look better than everyone else's, or the more tactful way to say it is distinguishing your photography from the photography of others. But these are the 5 that this week I really like. Now, next week I may turn around and I may have a different 5 that I want to give you. So, I don't want you to get, too locked in on these 5. These are 5 that I really like, but believe me, I got another 5 and another 5 and another 5. And this was what was so interesting about working on the book, Digital Photography Companion, because I'd be working on it, and I'd be kind of coming up with these things, and then a week or two would go by, and I'd go, oh, what about this, or what about that? Or I'd talk to somebody, and they would jog my memory about something, or they would offer a tip, and then I go, oh, I got to get this in here, and that sort of thing. And that's why we spend, months writing books and don't write them in a couple of weeks, because you have to allow all these thoughts to percolate. You have to have those weird dreams, like I had last night, so that you can thoroughly get into all of the different possibilities. So these are the 5 for today, but believe me, these aren't the only 5. Speaking of that, here's the 5th one. And this is another tip that I think that you can do to help make your stuff look different than everyone else's, which is, for some of your shots, try converting them to black and white. Black and white is so easy to do these days. If you're in Adobe Camera Raw, it has a convert to black and white, a convert to grayscale, or you can do the tip that I talked about in Katrine's podcast, the podcast where I reviewed her class, where you slide all the sliders, you desaturate all the channels, and work with that. In iPhoto, in the effects palette, you have a black and white button. Lightroom, you know, you can convert to black and white there. In Aputure, you have a beautiful monochrome mixer that not only lets you convert to black and white, but has all the different filters, the yellow filter, the red filter, the orange filter. So you can take a look at, you know, the traditional, how the traditional photography filters would look on this particular shot. So just about every application that you have or that you would use for managing or editing your photographs probably has a very nice convert to black and white option. And I think you should try it sometimes because the shot that I use, the shot that I'll run on the site, is just of a looking down on a stairwell that, you know, that goes around and around. And in color, I just didn't like it. I was interested in the, you know, sort of the geometric aspect of it. But in color, it had weird lighting that I was having a hard time balancing, some kind of mercury vapor light that even with custom white balance was challenging me. And I was getting a little bit of a kind of a green cast that was sort of icky. And the contrast wasn't as good as I wanted. And it just, in color, it just wasn't working. I couldn't get, you know, really what happened was I couldn't get the color out of the way so that I could really look at the shot that I wanted to take. So I said, maybe I should try converting this shot to black and white and see how it looks. So I did the first pass on black and white with it, and right away I go, oh, this is so much better. The whole thing just kind of popped, just sort of came to life, and the whites were nice and crispy, and all the sort of icky color tones that I didn't like went to various shades of gray that were very pleasing, and then I started playing with the contrast and so forth and got something that I really liked. So this is a case where the black and white shot really, I thought, was far superior than the color shot, and sometimes you just have to move the color aside to really get to the essence of the shot, and black and white allows you to do that. It also allows you to, again, even though black and white is wildly popular right now and people love it, still not that many people are converting their stuff to black and white. So again, you take 10 photographers and you have them shoot the stairwell or something, probably only a couple of them would think to convert to black and white. Everyone else is going to work in color. So you can distinguish your work from others still, even this day and age, by converting the shots that are most appropriate to black and white and really kind of make them pop. So those are my 5 tips for this week. And again, they are get close, or in parentheses, if it's dangerous, frame close, right? Don't get close, just, you know, use a longer lens and frame tightly. Second, shoot at night or shoot at twilight or shoot on the edges of the day, especially when you can still have color in the sky, maybe get some lights going on with buildings and stuff. Very magical, great time to take pictures, make your stuff look different than everyone else's. Control your flash. Learn how to control your flash. Take total control of your flash and know when to turn it on, when to turn it off, and when to use the specialty modes. And one of the things that can help you with this also is for compact cameras that have scene modes, there are some nice scene modes that help you use the right flash settings in certain situations. So look at those too. But no matter how you go about it, make sure that you take control of your flash. Switch to burst mode when you're taking portraits. Turn off the flash, find some good ambient lighting, get your model comfortable, and put it in burst mode and see what you can get. Get her, get him moving around a little bit and rattle off some shots. You're going to like them better than just the stiff pose shots. And finally, when appropriate, try black and white. I think for some shots, it really breathes life into them, especially things with geometric and so forth. So you can always, if you're in the field and you kind of wonder how it's going to look, you can switch to black and white mode in the field. Look at it on the LCD. If you think it translates well, then switch back to color or raw or whatever you're doing, and capture it that way, because it's better to convert it on the computer later. But, you know, at least you can preview your black and white on the back of your LCD while you're in the field to see if it's an interesting shot or not. I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. We have a great sponsor lineup. Boink Software, the makers of Photomagico. And they have some exciting new things that I'm actually going to be talking about here pretty soon. They're great supporters of the Digital Story, and they have a tile on the Digital Story, so if you haven't gone over there lately, click on it and check it out. And there's also a new beta version of Photomagical that does some very powerful stuff. So if you like to play with it a little bit more, if you've kind of outgrown the current version, you might want to take a look at the beta version. Also, ExpoDisc, those ExpoDisc folks, I saw them also last week, and they're very enthusiastic about what they're doing because I think they really believe that they're helping photographers take better pictures, and I believe that too. I gave away some ExpoDisc at my talk, and if I had a lineup of stuff, the ExpoDisc, books, training videos, stuff like that, the ExpoDisc always went first. They're very popular. And if you haven't tried one, find someone that has one and check it out. And you can always click on the tile on the Digital Story and see what they're up to. And finally, Low Pro Bags, terrific company that makes just great gear to protect everything from your small electronics to your camera bags. I mean, to your cameras itself. Low Pro, they have a tile on the site too. So I want to thank all of our sponsors for helping me keep this show on the air. I also want to mention that I put up a page on the site for the new book, Digital Photography Companion, and there's a link up at the top under Quick Links that'll take you right to the page. And what I've done here is that, first of all, I've just given you a little overview of what's in the book. This is a book I'm extremely excited about. There's a link there where, it's called Order Now, where you can just click on it and it'll take you directly to the Amazon page where you can order the book. And even though it's not out yet, you can pre-order it and they'll send it to you as soon as it's ready. It should be ready to ship in early March. And then what I'm doing is that for content right now, for content that is related to stuff that I teach in the book, I'm listing tips on that page, on the Digital Photography Companion page, that sort of expand the book or talk more about some of its techniques. Now, once the book is out and all of you have it in your hands, then what I'm going to do is solicit tips, from you guys, where you've tried a technique or something and it worked, or you found a way to, to change it up a little bit. And then I want to run those on this page too. So sort of make it, a living Digital Photography Companion. So that'll be a little bit more in the future, but even right now, it's a pretty interesting page. There's lots of interesting stuff on it. I have photos from Digital Story members in comments and so forth. So if you haven't had a chance yet, make sure you click on that link and take a look at the Digital Photography Companion page. And finally, grab shots and photo assignment. Remember, the photo assignment for this month, for January, is edges. And I'm getting some terrific stuff in. Grab shots still running a little light. So if you're sitting on one, make sure you send one in. And even if it's a rainy day, like it is here in Northern California, you can get close on something and take some shots. There's always something to take pictures of, so make sure you pull out your camera, get some great shots, send them in, and I'll try to run them on the site. And I will see you here next week for the Digital Story. Thanks so much for coming by.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.